All right, we're going to switch over. Okay, you guys hearing me all right? Okay. All right, so I want to welcome you in the name of Christ. Thanks for being here today. Thanks for being with me. I know you could have done... Oh, yeah. How about now? All right. I'm getting a little bit of echo. How about now? Still a little bit? All right, we'll start over. I want to welcome you in the name of Christ. Glad to be with you. I know you could have been a lot of different places, but you're here, so thank you for that. I also wanted to echo our brother David in his comments about last night. If you were here last night, you know what I mean. It was very special. It was a really neat thing. I know there were hours of preparation, days of preparation that went into that by the young peoples and by the parents. And that event, in case you didn't know, is not always a fundraiser. It's actually an investment by the young peoples, in many cases, on doing a special evening for each of you. So I just wanted to recognize them. I know there were a lot of people who put a lot of time into that, and it was really neat. It was really special. So thank you all. I hope today to edify you, and specifically in your growth of faith, your faith in God. I'm going to start in a little bit of a weird way. I'm in marketing, is my profession, and one of the early things you learn when you're in marketing or advertising is about how people are motivated to buy things. And if you studied this at all, it's people think, you know, when you first come into it, that people are making logic-based decisions in what they buy. They're not. It's most of the time connected to some kind of emotion that is prompting you to want to buy something. So I'm going to give some examples. So I've got a couple logos up here, Head & Shoulders, shampoo, and 3D white strips from Crest. So both of these advertisers have awakened you to the fear that people are judging you based on if you have dandruff or yellowed teeth. So this is a fear that they're trying to press on you guys. It seems a little silly. Here's another one. So these ones are starting to get a little bit more serious, and some of these step on my own toes. So AAA insurance, why do you buy AAA insurance? Maybe a wise investment, or maybe it's because you're afraid of getting stuck on the highway and having to change your own tire. What about your carrier for your phone? Are you going to go with Verizon? Are you going to go with AT&T? They're trying to convince you that you should be very concerned about being in the upper North Dakota and on a highway and not being able to reach somebody. They're playing into this fear of what would happen if I didn't have cell coverage. Okay, these are getting closer and closer to home, hopefully. Ring doorbell, if you have a Ring doorbell. We've got one. One of the reasons we have it emotionally is to hopefully avoid embarrassment, because we have a neighbor who comes over all the time at weird times, and it is like we get 10 seconds warning before he shows up at our front door, and so the Ring does that for us. You may have, if you've seen a commercial for Ring, they're going to warn you, you know, it's going to protect you in case there are bad guys or storming your house, or if you have a medical condition, when no one else is there, someone will pick up on it. They're playing into all these sometimes very real fears and get you to try to buy. So I've got a logo up there of a prominent seller of defense mechanisms, and that may be something that maybe it's a hobby, or maybe there's this embedded fear of what happens if the bad guys come. It's just something we have to be aware of. Okay, Aetna, so insurance is obviously playing off of this most of the time. So they're playing to the fear of what if I have a just disastrous medical condition? Will I be bankrupt by that? But now we have Aflac too, which is basically, if I understand it right, it's insuring you in case your insurance doesn't work. So we've got levels and levels of protection we're adding on here as we think about the things we're concerned about in our life. So I'm not saying that any of these are wrong. I have some of these, I use some of these, you probably do too. I'm not saying that you're acting always out of fear if you invest in something like this, but it is a major factor. And the thing I think I'm concerned most about in my own life and maybe in yours is feeling like we're at peace because we have layered these things on, that we're using these things to try to protect us from these fears we have. And these layers of protection are insulating us from the daily need we have for God and the reliance we need to grow, and the faith, most importantly, the faith that we need to develop by seeing God work in us through our needs on the daily basis. So Jesus shared an example of this type of thinking. There's this final example I have on the screen. Do I have enough money to retire? So if you've watched TV for 30 minutes, you've seen an advertisement asking you this question, and they try to do it in really nice ways, but it's always the same. If when I'm done working, will I have to go back to work? Or what happens, will I get to go on vacation after I retire? It's always this question of what will my future look like? Do I have enough money? So Jesus shares this example in Luke 12. I've got just references for most of these verses, so I'd ask you to look them up on your phone or in your scriptures. Let's go to Luke 12. And so Jesus had someone, he was talking with people. People were coming up, asking him questions all the time. And he had someone come up to him, ask a very practical question about what should they do with their inheritance. He and his brother had inherited some money. What should we do with that? And instead of giving him a really practical answer, he helped him see the underlying fear and concern and wrong thinking the guy was dealing with. So we're going to go to verse 16 of Luke 12. I'm going to read through verse 21. And he spake a parable unto them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, because I have no room where to bestow my fruits? And he said, this will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, thou hast much good laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. So this man, he had been faced with this question of what should I do? Will I be able to retire? And he said, yeah, I'm going to have all these goods, and I'm just going to build this gigantic barn, and I'm going to store up all these goods, and I'm just going to be able to live the easy life. Let's see what happens. Verse 20. But God said unto him, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then whose shall these things be which thou hast provided? And what's the point? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. So he's telling the story to help us recognize that we can do all the things within our earthly means to try to protect ourselves. And guess what? If you've invested in AAA insurance, I know there are people who still haven't had their tire changed on the side of the road. My phone has gone out in places I didn't expect it to. All these things that we buy and we try to put in place to shield us from risk, they all ultimately are of human nature and they all fail. And where are we going to be in that moment when everything else that we've tried to do to protect us from fear has failed? Are we going to have belief and faith that's going to carry us through that time? So I titled the sermon, Faith on the Daily. I have a teenager now, and we teach Sunday school teenagers, and so I'm trying to use some cool lingo. Is this working? Did you guys know? I don't know. This is probably like 10 years old. You guys probably don't even use this anymore. What I'm trying to say is faith on the daily basis. What do we need to do in our lives to, on a daily basis, edify, grow our faith in God in the small things, in the daily small things, so that when the big storms of life come, that we have a faith that'll carry us through those times. So I want to encourage you in that faith. I want to share what Jesus taught his disciples, what he taught his followers about God and his care for us. We'll talk through some examples in scripture of how God grew people's faith over time, share some examples, some thoughts and verses about how do we just do this on a daily basis? How do we grow our faith? So I know if you're like me, you get in your head sometimes in the middle of the night and you're thinking about how does all this work? And one of the things I've really struggled with in earlier in my life especially was how does the God who created the entire universe, who has placed every one of these stars in that galaxy, how does he have time also to care about these little things? And there are 7 billion people on the world now, in the earth now, I think. How does he look on every one of those people and listen to their prayers and intercede on their behalf and try to influence them for good? How does he do that? And It just, that's a dichotomy that I had struggled with at times to think through. And I guess what I want to encourage you is I have been convinced over and over again, and you probably have too, that he cares about the minutia of our lives, and he is willing to help us and to build our faith on the little things so we have faith on him in the bigger things. Let's go to Acts 17, start with verse 22. So Paul is on a missionary trip, and he comes to a place where as he's walking down the streets, he finds all of these little temples and shrines to different gods. And he gets to where he finds one that, just to make sure, he describes them as superstitious, just to make sure they've covered all their bases, they also do a shrine for the unknown god in case they missed any. So he's going to address them using that knowledge that this is a people who is worried about all these little different aspects of their life. Let's go to Acts 17. Then Paul stood, starting in verse 22, reading through verse 28. Then Paul stood in the midst of Mars Hill and said, "Ye men of Athens, I perceive that in all things you are too superstitious. For as I passed by and beheld your devotions, I found an altar with this inscription, to the unknown God, whom therefore you ignorantly worship, him declare I unto you. God that made the world and all things therein, seeing that he is the Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands, neither is worshipped with men's hands as though he needed anything, seeing he giveth to all life and breath and all things, and hath made one the blood of all nations of men for to dwell on all the face of the earth, and hath determined the times before appointed and the bounds of their inhabitation." I'm going to continue through 28. That they should seek the Lord, if happily they might feel after him and find him, though he be not far from every one of us. And in him we live and move and have our being. And as certain also of your own poets have said, for we are also his offspring. So he's telling them, you know, you're walking down this and you're seeing the shrine to the God of the harvest and the moon and the sun and the rain and everything. And he's telling those, it's one God. It is the God, and he is in everything, and he sees everything. And he's the God of creation, and he's the God who is with you in every moment. It's that same God. He's proclaiming that God as the God we worship, the God Yahweh. So I want to encourage you from my own experience and from what the scriptures say. He has the capacity. He is ever present. He's omnipresent. He has the capacity to see you in every moment, and he desires to have that relationship with you where you have just continuous in prayer relationship with him, where you're addressing even the smallest thing with him and you're bringing him into that relationship, where you have this dialogue of needing help, of praising, of working together. All right, so Jesus in his ministry is going to tell try to get them to have this feel for this God who is with them and who cares for them. And he's going to give some analogies. I've got a couple pictures on screen, and this is from parables and stories he's going to tell from Matthew 6. Anybody recognize what stories these might be? I heard lilies of the field, and there's another one. A sparrow, a bird that's cared for. And he said, this is the God and how he cares for the rest of creation. He takes care of these lilies of the field that are the beautifulest thing. Humans cannot create anything as beautiful as what God is putting out in the fields, and he's caring for them, he's growing for them, he's providing for them. And what about this lowly bird of the field? It is cared for and provided for by God. How does that happen? It happens in a lot of different ways. God's built this creation in a way that it can sustain itself and it can sustain the creatures are in it. He brings us into that process. If you have, I think about our sister Nanette Smith when I see this, she's a feeder of birds, and you probably are too. And those, God is using you to care for his creation. But so the illustration he's trying to tell them, if God cares for these lilies, if he cares for these birds that we look down on, how much more does he care about you who are the pinnacle of his creation? What about this? You guys recognize this parable? This is from Matthew 7. He's kind of continuing in this theme. We can read this one. Let's go to Matthew 7 through 11. Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. For every one that asketh receiveth, and he that seeketh findeth, and to him that knocketh it shall be opened. O what man is there of you, whom if his son ask bread, will give him a stone? Or if he ask a fish, will give him a serpent? If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts unto your children, how much more shall your Father, which is in heaven, give good things to him that ask them? So you think about Jesus and his time on earth, the limited amount of time. Think about the scriptures that recorded us on a limited amount of pages. They thought it was really important for you to know that God was there, he listened to you, he cared for you, he's caring for you at all the times, and that he wants to give you good things. This is the God that we serve. It's this God who wants to care for us and wants us to ask him for help. All right, I want to talk about a couple examples from the scripture. Couple stories, these are specifically from the Old Testament, of people and how God works with them to grow their faith. So one of the reasons I'm asking us to really think about the daily small things that God can help us with and that can grow our faith is if you look in the stories in your own life and in the scriptures, it seems like there's sometimes a progression of God helping people in really small ways so they learn a little bit about him, so that he can help them with something bigger and bigger and bigger. So we see this in the book of Daniel in chapter 1, verses 8 through 16. And I've got two pictures. Does anybody know that one on the left? What does that represent from this story? Anybody recognize that? It's hard to tell. Beans, they're beans. It's weird. Let's go to Daniel chapter 1. So we're going to see God kind of playing out this growth of character, growth of faith with some of his children. Daniel 1, verses 8 through 16. So if you remember where we are in history, the children of Israel have been taken. Many of them have been taken from their home and brought into the lands of pagans, basically, who were trying to infiltrate them with their pagan beliefs. And it was a systematic approach. And so they're in this system where they're trying to be true and honor their God while they're being confronted with different ideas. But Daniel proposed in his heart he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God, so do you understand the conflict here? Daniel and his friends had been living in a way where they had been following the law of the Testament, and they had been eating specific things or not eating specific things based on the guidance they'd been given. And now they're brought into a land where they're presented with all of this rich food that is outside of what they knew they should be doing. Now God brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who hath appointed your meat and your drink, for why should he see your faces worse liking that than the children which are of your sort? Then shall you make me endanger my head to the king. So Daniel's asked this hard thing, hey, don't do what the king has said, do this, help me out here. And the prince of the eunuchs is concerned about this. Then said Daniel to Melzar, who was the prince of the eunuchs, who had set over Daniel and Hananiah and Mishael and Azariah, prove thy servants, because I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. So what's pulse? The closest thing I can find is it's legumes, it's beans. So he asks, instead of all this rich meat and this wine, just do this test with us. Give us water, give us beans, and let's see how this works out. Prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. Then let our countenances be looked upon for thee, and that the countenance of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat, as thou seest, deal with thy servants. So he consented to them in this matter and proved them 10 days. And at the end of the 10 days, their countenances appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. So what would the temptation have been in that moment? It would have been, let's just go with the flow. This is, we're outside of our realm. When in Rome, do as the Romans do. We're just gonna go with how it is. But instead, they act in faith, believing the word of God that they would be better off. And they do this act of faith that is hard, but it's smaller than what they're gonna face in the future. So what's this image on the right? Anybody recognize this? What's this? It's a furnace. I think this is one probably in Detroit or Pittsburgh instead of there, but it's representing that fiery furnace that they're about to get tested with. So if you know this story, it's in the second chapter, 19 through 30. These same people are going to be tested again, and this one with the even higher test. Will they bow to a God who is not true, or will they live by what examples they've been given and what scriptures they would be given? And guess what? Those lessons that they had been learning through their life, they gave them this courage, this faith to act and do a hard thing. And we know what happened. They were saved from that fiery furnace. They went in the furnace and they came out of the furnace. They were saved. I want to give you another example real quick. This is an obvious one. So anybody recognize who's portrayed in this picture? David, yeah. So we read about the story in 1 Samuel, and we hear David as a young man come onto the scene of this battle. And he sees a giant, and the giant is cursing God and cursing all the Israelites. And he asks, why is nobody facing this giant? He's cursing God, and everyone is afraid. And he goes and he says, well, I'll do it. And he talks to the king, and the king's asking, how do you have the courage to do this? And what does he tell him? Well, I have a background in here. I used to be a shepherd, and I had to fight off a lion. I had to fight off a bear. He had seen God work on his behalf to protect him from hard things before, and it gives him the courage to take on something bigger. What ultimately happens? Of course, he triumphs. With the power of God, he slays the giant. And we could leave it at there, but I think that this story was part of his progression of faith even to harder things, and maybe even the hardest thing in his life. So if you remember the story of David, he falls and he commits just horrible sins. And he lives in the space with those sins for a little bit until God puts this plan in place to reconcile him to him. And he sends Nathan, a prophet, to tell David of his sins. And think about the king on his throne with all the power of his nation. He has to accept that decree of God, and he has to recognize his sins. He confesses his sins, and he comes into a right relationship with God. To me, that was probably harder than the dealing with the giant, but he does it. And from that courage that he had been from a very early age growing in that faith. So let's hear a little bit of David testifying about his experiences with God's care. This is in Psalms 139. Let's turn there. So David's going to tell you about how God's worked with him and how he cares about the big things and the small things. Psalms 139, and I'm going to read the first 10 verses. O Lord, thou hast searched me and known me. Thou knowest my downsitting and mine uprising. Thou understandest my thought afar off. Thou compassest my path and my lying down. Thou art acquainted with all of my ways. But there is not a word in my tongue, but lo, O Lord, thou knowest it altogether. Thou hast beset me behind and before and laid thine hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain unto it. Whither shall I go from thy spirit, or whither shall I flee from thy presence? If I ascend up into heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there shall thy hand lead me, and thy right hand shall hold me. David said from his experience, what he has found from God. He's found that God's there with him in these small parts. He knows him to his core. And wherever he goes, that God is, he is not outside of God's view and presence. So in our modern world, with all of our protections, all these layers of protection we put on ourselves with different things we buy and different things we prepare and invest in, despite all of those protections, we're still very much in the daily need of God's care, more than we know. Thankfully, I found that God is really willing to open up opportunities for us to discover this. And what I mean is, we go through hard times and we find out that all of our measures we put in place are not enough. And there, we ultimately are always in the need of God's direction and his care and his mercy on us. So I'm gonna just share a couple testimonies from our own life. So I was talking with Aubrey about this. One of the kind of the stories or testimonies of our family. When we were doing a home remodel, if you've ever done this, this is one of the dirtiest jobs you can do, tore all of the popcorn ceiling off of our ceilings. That is the dustiest, dirtiest job you can imagine. And what it does is generate just piles and piles of just trash. And so we had done this process, vacuumed up everything, put it all in trash bags, and Aubrey realized that she had lost one of her earrings. And it was a kind of a, it's an earring, but it was a special one. It was something that had a lot of sentimental value to us. And so we had prayed about, help us find this. She had made it a matter of prayer, help us find this. And she didn't just pray about it, she sorted through every bag of trash from with the sieve from that project, and it was not there. But she had prayed, and she had been kind of given the words, and I think this is going back to God being able to give us the words to pray, the Spirit being able to give us the words to pray when we don't know what to pray. And she had been asked, she prayed for God to put it in her hands, is how she phrased it. And kind of wondered at that statement. But months went past, and I know there are a lot of people here who are dealing with unanswered prayers for a long time, and that's just the reality of how this equation works. Sometimes it's not immediate. Sometimes it's outside of God's will for that moment, and it's not going to come for a long time. So, but what happened? We were at our house months later, and one of the kids had found this just in a random spot, hidden from us, from something we'd probably gone through 10 times, and brought it to her and said, "Look what I found, Mom," and put it in her hand. And it was that direct fulfillment in a powerful way of God's care on those smallest of things. And I know for us, that was also a testimony that played out into other more important testimonies where we had been made to know that our kids were cared for, that he was in their hands. And He's just good and cares about the little stuff. I know in my, I've had times where don't feel like I have a testimony. And I have been gone through months where I don't know if someone asked me what's my testimony right now as far as something God's done in your life. I don't know what I would share. I've just gone through dry times. And what I've found is often it is, probably every time, it's related to me not asking God for things, just trying to be self-sufficient and make it on my own and be resourceful. And I had a time recently where I was kind of dwelling in this lack of recent testimony of God's work in my life, and like not liking that. That's not a good thing to feel. And my mom had lost her keys, and there had been a couple people who had gone and looked for the keys, and we looked all over the place. I had gone and looked for the keys, all the places they should be, and they were not there. And it had been a couple days. I said, "I'm gonna go look one more time." And I pulled up in front of her house, and before I left the car, I was reminded of this testimony of God being able to put things in our hands. And I tried to have faith, more faith than I have normally. And I just, "God, I know you can do this. You can take care of this situation. It's not outside your purview." And I stepped out of the car and I immediately saw it. It was just boom to boom. It was within 10 seconds they were in my hand. And I needed that. And it gave me just that motivation of ask more, trust God more, ask God for the small things. Had it happen a bunch of times recently where the more I ask, the more I see him playing a role in my life and building my faith. So if you have the desire to have God more present in your life, how do you get started? So thankfully in Alma 16, we have a really good, practical, beautiful example of how to build your faith. It's just a really cool passage. I'm not going to read all of it. If you go to Alma 16, 139, 174 is most of that experiment. He calls it the experiment of faith. I want to look at just the first step. So if you want to take this step, if you want to go into growing your faith, how do you get started? So we're going to go to Alma chapter 16. Now, as I said concerning faith, that it was not a perfect knowledge, even so it is with my words. You cannot know of their surety at first, under perfection, any more than faith is a perfect knowledge. So he's been talking to them about the idea of faith. He's been talking to people who need to come to a belief. And he's, you know, dealing with the reality of, well, how is that faith going to happen? But behold, I will wake and arouse your faculties, even to an experiment upon my words, and exercise a particle of faith. Even if you can no more than desire to believe, let this desire work in you, and even until you believe in a manner that you can give place for a portion of my words. So he's starting, just have a desire to have faith. Just have a desire to understand. Just let that grow in you, just even wanting it. And that's going to give you place to start this experiment. And now I will compare the word unto a seed. Now if you give place that a seed may be planted in your heart, and behold, if it be a true seed or a good seed, if you do not cast it out by your unbelief, that you will resist the Spirit of the Lord, behold, it will begin to swell in your breasts. And when you feel those swelling motions, you will begin to say within yourself, it must needs be that this is a good seed, or that the word is good. For it beginneth to enlarge my soul, yea, it beginneth to enlighten my understanding, yea, and it beginneth to be delicious to me. So that's really the first step I'd ask for you. If you're in this spot where you, I don't know, I want to grow, here's where it goes. Just have the desire, and then let that start to work on you. Ask God and watch. Watch how God works in your life, and then see what it feels like. He's giving them this example. It's going to feel delicious. It's going to feel beautiful to you when God starts to work in your life and you see him interacting with you on a daily basis. I'll let you read the rest of that passage on your own, but kind of use it to talk about, well, how can we increase our faith just in our daily life? I've got some examples. So in James 1, we're told to pray when we need wisdom. If you're facing a struggle, a facing decision, don't try to make it on your own. Ask God for wisdom. And this can play out in a lot of different ways. He can be inspired. He can inspire you. He can talk to you in your mind. He can have someone else come and talk to you. He can open doors, close doors, so that there's wisdom in the decisions that are made. Pray for an opportunity to help someone. So ask God, and you can see this play out. Ask God, help, send me somebody who needs my help. Help someone interact with me who I can help and who I can serve. Pray when you need peace. So I know there's a lot of emotional distresses. From my own life, there was a time I was dealing with some turmoil, and it had been days of just like anguish and turmoil on this, and I had a night where I just could not sleep. I'm sure you've had those. Just your mind cannot get off of a problem. And it was 2 or 3 in the morning. I'd been dealing with this anguish. And all I could say, just kind of came out of me was, oh God. And it was not a blasphemy. I was concerned at first, but no, it was really just me crying out to God, asking for relief from this emotional struggle. And I said it over and over again. And then what happened? I had peace, and I fell asleep, woke up one of the best nights of sleep after I started. I know that he wants to be there with us and bring us peace in those hard times. Pray when you see someone in trouble. So when you're driving down the road and you see a car accident, this is a great opportunity for us to pray and be reminded of the need that those people have in that moment. Have your kids participate in that. It's something that a way you can demonstrate your faith and bring your kids into the faith of God and his ability to answer prayer. Pray when you lose something. That seems like it's one of the most frequent ones for me, that God helps out and demonstrates that he cares about the little stuff. Pray to escape temptation. So 1 Corinthians talks about this in chapter 10, 12 through 13. This is one of the things God's told you to do. If you're facing a temptation, God knows it, and he can help you get out of it. Even in those hardest times, he can help you get out of that temptation and move forward. Pray for charity in handling hard people. So you probably on a daily basis are going to run into someone in your life who is just kind of a difficult person. Maybe they're just on the other end of the spectrum from you in some belief or in some attitude. Pray that God will help you get through those conversations, that you'd be able to be charitable to them and represent him in your actions towards them. So these are all things that are on the daily basis, on the weekly basis, you're running into. And I ask that you would use this as the beginning of that experiment of your faith to just see how God can work in your daily life. I'm going to close with 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 16 through 18. This is a simple verse. Rejoice evermore. So when you see God play those things out in your life, rejoice in them, remember them, write them down. Tell your family members about how he's working in your life. Pray without ceasing. And that's not always praying, just asking for things. That's being in communication with God and having him be part of your day. In everything, give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you. So I want to encourage you. I hope you feel encouraged. God is there. He is omnipresent. He is in every moment. He has the capacity, which is outside of our capacity, to be everywhere in every moment throughout time and have a relationship with each individual in this room and outside of this room. And he wants that. He gives one of the most amazing parables where if you read the parable, I don't know what it's called, but it's of the old woman who's coming to a master and saying, hey, right this wrong. And she does it over and over again until finally God, the master in the parable, is worn down by this old woman who keeps bothering him enough that he acts and justice is met out. That is an example of how God is willing to listen to all of our prayers, all of our requests for aid over and over again. He wants that. He's asking for that. Don't deny him that by thinking you're self-sufficient or you can take care of it on your own. Let him be part of that everyday life. He wants to be. So give God the opportunity to show you that he is real and he cares for you and he wants a relationship with you. And pray in faith believing. When you pray, believe that God has the capacity to do it. Thank you all.